This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org.
Now for the criminal charges.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The death of investment bank Bear Stearns happened so fast, heads were spinning on Wall Street. Now, heads are going to roll. Two former Bear Stearns hedge fund managers were arrested this morning. They're likely to face federal charges for misleading investors about subprime mortgages. The collapse of two hedge funds is what triggered the downfall of Bear Stearns after 85 years. All the attention on housing has been focused on subprime loans and foreclosures. But today, Congress looks at another kind of housing crisis that might be brewing. Older, low-income rental units. Sarah Gardner has more.
Lawmakers will hear some sobering statistics. Between now and 2013, three-quarters of federally subsidized rental units will be in jeopardy. That's when contracts on a lot of Section 8 housing developments expire. Section 8 renters pay up to 30% of their income in rent. The government pays the balance, subject to a federal cap. Michael Bodakin, president of the National Housing Trust, says once those contracts expire, owners can charge any rent the market will bear.
We show that when an owner opts out of Section 8 housing, the average rent hike is anywhere from 20 to 40%.
Bodakin expects future home foreclosures will force many families into the rental market, and that will push rents even higher. House Democrat Barney Frank is working on legislation aimed at preserving affordable housing. Bodakin is urging him to include tax and other incentives for owners. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
The price of oil climbed again this morning to $137 a barrel. There was another attack on an oil field in Nigeria. Shell had to shut it down. On Wall Street, the Dow is coming off two straight triple-digit losses. And this morning, it's barely hanging on to 12,000. The Dow is down another 19 points to 12,009. The NASDAQ is down 5, and the S&P 500 has dropped 2. In Asia, the markets finished about 2% lower. European shares are fairly flat so far. Where's the bright side? Where's the silver lining? I've been looking for it all morning. Just something positive to say about the economy. Here's what I came up with. High food prices might actually be good for our diets. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
Eggs cost about a third more than they did a year ago. Butter is up 10%, and whole wheat bread will cost you almost 20% more than last year. These prices are stretching the family budget and forcing us to rethink our food choices. Dietitian Linda McDonald runs the website Supermarket Savvy. She says this grocery store sticker shock might actually make us healthier.
This will get people back to the basics. They'll spend more time in the perimeter of the store where all the fresh foods are. I mean, basically, that's where your more healthy foods are, things that are more economical that maybe take a little more time to prepare.
For example, rice bought in bulk is cheaper and healthier than a microwave-ready side dish. And food bought in bulk means fewer trips to the grocery store. When gas is $4 a gallon, every food run counts. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
In the Gaza Strip, cab drivers are creating new recipes to substitute for gas. Four parts cooking oil, one part turpentine. Also cooking oil and shots of diesel, pesticides, and even air freshener. Drivers can't afford gasoline. It's going for $27 a gallon on the black market. But these new concoctions are making people sick from the fumes. Oh, and the price of cooking oil has doubled.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thrive and Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit Fortune 500 company helping members thrive in retirement. You can learn more at thriveand.com/retirement. And by the Medtronic Foundation, working to reduce heart disease, the number one killer of American women, by supporting Women Heart. Information at womenheart.org.
China has evacuated tens of thousands of people from the area hit by last month's earthquake. It's the rainy season, and the government's worried about landslides and floods. China's government still rules with its communist iron fist. But during this crisis, It has relaxed its grip somewhat and let non-governmental organizations do some of the work. Lisa Chow has this report from Chengdu.
Tianjin stands in a small room that's become command center for more than 30 Chinese NGOs. She looks at her wall and rattles off that day's activities, distributing water purification systems, providing books for children, and coordinating SUVs and radios for relief efforts. Tianjin is one of three people in charge of Chengdu 512, a coalition of NGOs that formed 3 days after the earthquake.
The government deals with big projects on a macro level. NGOs, we're smaller, but we're also powerful in the sense that we're specialized.
The impact of last month's earthquake is so widespread and the needs are so great, the government has essentially outsourced certain responsibilities to NGOs. Chen Taiyong says the latitude granted to these groups is unprecedented. He's China director for the U.S.-based charity Heifer Project International.
This time, government already recognized the power of the NGOs.
But he points out, it's still the government coordinating the work. And that's the hitch. The ruling Communist Party still has ultimate power. For example, to get access to some of the affected areas, you need a government-issued pass. And the government bans most NGOs from soliciting public donations. Only large charities, like China Red Cross, are allowed to openly fundraise. But now, more than a month after the earthquake, the Chinese media and even the general public are questioning where all the money is going. Tianjin says her organization, Chengdu 512, is as transparent as it gets. She points to a ledger, essentially sheets of paper taped to the wall.
See here? We spent 120 yuan, and it says what it's for.
She says the list is posted every day online. And she says her organization spends very little on administrative costs.
We're not allowed to raise money from the public yet, but I think we will someday.
In the meantime, it's the Chinese government that's providing office space for her organization. In Chengdu, I'm Lisa Chow for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.